And now we welcome Skip Berrien, Roy Jones, and Jim Weber to tell us about their journeys. I've been looking forward to this all week. Thank you for being here.
We were asked several weeks ago to prepare our words, but in the past 3 weeks, so much has happened to our lives that I think that I expect maybe we might veer a little bit from what we prepared, so bear with us a bit. I think all of us come to this work for social action with different types of inspiration. For me, it's been important to listen and observe the world around me and figure out what makes me uneasy. There's been a lot. And what do I have that can make a difference? And if I choose to move into a zone of discomfort, how can I do that most effectively? My childhood in a small town in upstate New York sensitized me to the richness and goodness of friends and neighbors on which my family became dependent. Bob's song brought me back to many of those people who were important in my life. At age 7, I was exposed to abject and grinding poverty in Mexico when my family spent a summer just across the border in affluent San Diego. As a child, I could not resolve that disparity. And as I see Guadalupe and all the others being gathered up in the past few days, I still find it very, very difficult. Then there are the many individuals in my life who have provided a nudge, insight, and counsel. My college friend Stan opened me up to liberal ways of thinking about the world's problems. I almost became a socialist at that time. A little later, my career decision to become a pediatrician, thus providing a platform for my social action, emanated from one of those rare moments of spectacular insight, that inner light that sometimes just flares up. This was followed by reflection and counsel with colleagues, mentors, and of course, those most close to me, my family, and my wife, Ginny. For both Ginny and I, our affiliation with Unitarian Universalism communities has nudged us into worlds of great opportunity. It was my UU fellowship friends in the early 1980s who induced me to speak publicly out on regard to nuclear weapons. And it was an 80-year-old, Elizabeth, who convinced Ginny and me to attend an international meeting on nuclear weapons, which was followed by a tour of the Soviet Union with fellow physicians. Little did we know in 1984 that these nudges of these well-meaning UUs would result in many years of collaboration with Russians in the far-flung reaches of eastern Siberia, which extended for the remainder of my career. Talk about a zone of discomfort. That was certainly it. This work presented huge challenges in terms of identifying expectations, communicating across cultures, accepting limitations, dealing with many individual personal tragedies, and then moving on from disappointment. But in spite of these issues, there was a reservoir of shared hope, plenty of good personal chemistry, many hours in the banya or sauna, and a lot of vodka. And this gave us a real sense that despite the stumbles, we were able to move ahead. The people we met along the way and with whom we continue to share our lives have profoundly affected our worldview and just how we fit in. More recently, this congregation has provided spiritual grounding as I transition from a world of work to a world where I had discretionary time and choices not limited by an income career. Whether it was just cajoling or arm twisting, many in this congregation have continued to provide inspiration, challenge, and opportunity to continue work, which is soul-driven, as it is for many of us. This morning, Neil talked about the problems of water. Yes, I think that is a wonderful image for us to maintain as we move forward in this work. And I have to tell you that he wondered what we're doing in the legislature these days. And there is a major effort to maintain clear water for all of us. Some of you may be aware of the Coakley landfill problems, which are in bordering towns. And freshman Representative Mindy Mesmer has introduced a number of pieces of legislation to ensure that if there's a problem there, it's cleaned up, and throughout the state, that we have better standards for clean drinking water. So that is something that I think that we all can focus on here in the state. At this time, fraught with so much angst as we see our values trampled on, I reflect on my childhood experiences and the individuals who have guided me. I watch, I listen, I take stock of my strengths, and then cautiously step into a zone of manageable discomfort.
I was taken into the woods from infancy on. Before I could walk, I was carried. And there's a story of me being bundled into an Adirondack-type basket backpack with a litter of puppies for one hike. We went canoeing quite a bit. My father would draw my attention to small creatures and insects and often had object lessons to go along with the observations. He often joked about topiaries being futile attempts to improve on nature. When I tried to use the same argument on the subject of mowing the lawn, it did not work. Later, I found the woods a great solace when family dramas filled the house. Later still, I tried to give my kids some of what Dad gave to me. I'm glad to say they got it. My mother was a great idealist and joined Jesse Jackson's Rainbow Coalition in the 1960s. She did her best to instill in us a drive for justice. She was about action as well as words and sought out the friendship of African Americans in a sometimes embarrassingly heavy-handed way, as I saw it then. Now I see she was acting on her idealism with unusually strong integrity. No racist language or attitude was tolerated in our household, though we didn't entirely escape the more subtle racism inherent in our society. I registered for the draft when I was 18. I requested non-combatant status, 1AO, rather than full conscientious objection, in keeping with a lifelong habit of seeking compromise. I count myself extremely lucky that even though the college exemption was ended before I was of age, my number never came out of the fishbowl. I did march in the moratorium on Washington, protesting the bombing of Cambodia. After the war was over, I sort of dropped out of the activist mindset, went into a relatively asocial phase. Love of nature continued as a theme in my life. I wrote a poem called A Victor's Psalm, which shamelessly borrowed from the 23rd Psalm and started, "Blessed be the Lord and Lady. They nourish and protect me. Through growing things they counsel me. Cool waters sing their praise. Their climbing trails, both smooth and rocky, help pilgrims know their grace." I was somewhere on the word to being a heathen. But that's another story. I got married, my beloved and I, barefoot on an island as we said our vows. I went to grad school for a degree in expressive therapy, which led to providing and advocating for mental health care for citizens on the lowest economic rungs of society. My ideals were alive, but outside of my work, my activism went into hibernation. As I'm reading this, I remember I left something out. I did come out of hibernation briefly to become involved in a group called Beyond War. Our children were born. I was putting my energy into day work and moonlighting, fathering, and being a husband. Much of the time I was exhausted, averaging 5 hours of sleep per night over a period of about 5 years. When some of my responsibilities lightened up, my activism remained in hibernation. I still knew that nature and humanity were in trouble, but I didn't truly grasp the severity of the problem and didn't think there was much I could do about it. Before I knew it, my kids were independent adults, and my hair was more white than gray. Then my daughter, a vegan, sent me a DVD of Cowspiracy, which alerted me to how much my and other people's meat-eating habits were contributing to the climate crisis. Animal agriculture plays a huge part in this crisis. I changed my eating habits, but realized my behavior wasn't going to stop global warming all by itself. I decided to share the DVD with small groups of people where it seemed to have the same impact as it had on me. Yet I had a sinking feeling that the goal of having large populations of people give up meat was an ideal not closely tethered to reality. About this time, a woman named Colleen McConnell gave a workshop at Fuse based on Joanna Macy's work and philosophy, which are explained in a number of books, including one called Active Hope. There was very powerful work going on in that workshop, difficult to explain. We were encouraged to get in touch with our fear, grief, and anger about what was happening to our planet and everything living on it. This was the beginning of a series of exercises culminating in going forth, doing what we could in community with others. Another concept I found helpful is that of maintaining action and hope even when the outcome is uncertain. Apparent defeats do not rule out eventual victories, as progressive movements have shown over and over again throughout history. Moreover, I heard the statement that makes the option of sitting out the conflict untenable for me, that nobody can do everything, but everybody can do something. My impotent social guilt was lifted, though not eliminated, and my excuses for doing little to nothing could no longer justify my keeping my butt on the couch. I joined the group based on the book Active Hope. The literature and companions kept inspiration alive. We joined in actions consistent with our ideals, including the Albany, New York march, protesting a type of explosive and toxic oil being brought by the trainloads to Albany into a neighborhood predominantly lived in by people of color. Most recently, of course, was the Women's March in Boston with a contingent of UUs going to D.C. It was incredibly encouraging and affirming to discover so many people of the UU community had joined this action. Now more than ever, I need like-minded people around me to remain involved in right action, in what is truly, after all, a struggle. It is not going to get any easier. By myself, I simply lose inertia. This makes sense because by myself, I am far less powerful than people working in community. Regardless of outcome, my life has changed for the better.
In the beginning, some 4 years ago. While in a FUSE adult education group, Jim Slough and I identified climate change as of ultimate concern, but we had no spiritual framework to proceed. Enter Kendra Ford, who introduces us to Joanna Macy's work, comprising The Great Turning, The Cycle of the Work That Reconnects, and Active Hope. We listened to sermons, we bought books, many books, and we went to workshops. Enter Colleen O'Connell, a Macy acolyte and a beloved FUSE resource. In her workshops at Ferry Beach and at FUSE, we learned to express gratitude for the gift of life, to honor our pain, to see with new eyes, and to go forth. These four steps make up the cycle of the work that reconnects. In going forth, I purchased a whole new set of energy-efficient windows by Anderson Renewal. Yes, we saved heat, but alas, my wife's night-blooming Sirius died a lingering death. And I became a member of the Active Hope Study Group at FUSE, which has become a most enriching set of ongoing relationships, support, and learning. The group has been patient as they teach me, an engineer by training, and here I list one, two, three, that emotions influence thought. Number two, that interpersonal communications are a transfer of emotions. As well as other information. Number three, that this transfer of emotional information can lead a group to consensus. I can't wait. In addition, I became intrigued with the last two steps in the cycle of work that reconnects: seeing with new eyes and going forth. Seeing with new eyes led me to take an online course from Stockholm University on planetary boundaries and human opportunities. Climate change is one of the eight boundaries that make up our natural boundaries, planetary boundaries. And I was inspired to digest Thomas Friedman's latest book, Thank You for Being Late, with its emphasis on Mother Earth as one of the three big forces shaping the future, and Mother Earth as a political mentor, a source of new ideas for activists. In going forth, I'm studying the third Macy element in The Great Turning, shift in consciousness. To do so, I'm consulting Antonio Damasio's theory of consciousness, Alan Watkins' theory of coherence, and Daniel Siegel's interpersonal neurobiology. If this sounds like a PhD thesis, I did earn a PhD late in life, age 72. So you'll find me full of references. Not necessarily understanding, but references. Consciousness can be raised, and it can be shifted. Relationships play an essential role. So you can see, it has been a special spiritual, emotional, and thoughtful journey. Join me and join us in the next chapter. Thank you.